It's perfectly formed. A miracle of micro-engineering ready for its short visit to the world. Gossamer wings, still unfrayed, folded carefully over its imperceptibly breathing abdomen. 6 nimble legs, delicately placed on the dusty wall in mint condition, each with a complete set of 9 segments, not yet diminished in number by sharp connections with ventilation fans or jumping spiders' forelegs. Its golden bristled thorax, a power nugget, encasing the balled-up energy of flight muscles, so massive that it almost hides from view the serene face, behind which a miniaturized brain coordinates input and output channels of antennae, palps, all-seeing eyes, and the 8 interlocking sheaths of its parasitic proboscis. I'm standing in a hot and crowded pedestrian tunnel of London Underground's Liverpool Street station. Spectacles in one hand, nose pressed against the tiled wall, admiring this fine specimen of the house mosquito Culex molestus, freshly emerged from its pupa. But I am slowly waking up from my entomological reverie. Not only because of the rushed passers-by that avoid knocking into me with a last-second swerve and a muttered, "Excuse me," that is more accusatory than apologetic, but also because I am becoming uncomfortably aware of the CCTV camera suspended from the ceiling and Transport for London's repeatedly broadcast advice to its passengers to report any suspicious behaviour to a member of staff. For a biologist, the inner city is an unlikely place for any professional activities. The unwritten rule among biologists is that, when prompted, one should answer gruffly that cities are only necessary evils, where a true biologist spends as little time as possible. The real world lies outside the urban realm, in forests, dales and fields, where the wild things are. But if I'm honest, I must admit I secretly like cities. Not so much the organised, slick, well-oiled parts of them, but rather the grimy, organic fabric of the city, revealed in forgotten corners where the threadbare carpet of culture gives way. The city's underbelly, where the artificial and the natural meet and engage in ecological relations. To my biologist's eye, the inner city, for all its hustle and bustle and thoroughly unnatural appearance, becomes a constellation of miniature ecosystems, even in these seemingly sterile, thoroughly brick and concrete-clad streets of Bishopsgate. I spot life forms that cling on in stubborn defiance. Here, a snapdragon growing in wild profusion from some invisible crack in the plastered wall of a flyover. There, the unspeakable chemistry between cement and leaked sewage from which glassy off-white icicles are born, which in turn serve as anchor points for the soot-dusted webs of common orb-weaver spiders. The emerald veins of moss sprouting from the slits between cracked reinforced glass and its frame, fighting for supremacy with the rust bubbles working their way through the red lead paint. Feral rock pigeons with diseased feet balance among the plastic spines on a ledge. Somebody has put up a sticker next to it showing an enraged pigeon with bald wing fists saying, "Plastic needles represent a cynical, oppressive restriction of our right to free assembly. This fight is not over." And a mosquito on the wall of a train station underpass. It is not just any mosquito. Culex molestus is also known as the London Underground mosquito. It gained this name first because of the havoc it wreaked on Londoners sheltering on the platforms and tracks of the Central Line at Liverpool Street Station during the German bombing raids of the city in 1940. And then, in the 1990s, because of the interest taken in them by University of London geneticist Catherine Byrne. Byrne joined maintenance crews on their daily expeditions into the bowels of the city's tube network. They went into the deepest parts of the tunnels, where the brick walls supported tangles of wrist-thick electric cables are blackened by dust from the train's brake shoes, and where the only place indicators are mysterious codes in chalk, spray paint, and ancient enamelled plates. Here, the London Underground mosquitoes live and breed. They steal the blood of commuters and lay their eggs in flooded sumps and shafts, which is where Byrne collected their larvae. She took samples of water with larvae from 7 places on the Central, Victoria and Bakerloo lines, brought them to her lab, waited for the larvae to develop into adult mosquitoes, like the one I saw on that tunnel wall, and then extracted their proteins for genetic analysis. 20 years ago, I saw her present her results at a conference in Edinburgh. Even though her audience consisted of seasoned evolutionary biologists, she managed to thrill us all. First, the underground mosquitoes in the 3 tube lines were genetically different from one another. This was, Byrne told us, because the tube lines formed nearly separate worlds, with the cloud of mosquitoes in each line stirred and mixed by the constant piston-like action of trains moving around in snugly fitting tunnels. The only way for the mosquitoes in the Central, Bakerloo and Victoria lines to become genetically mixed, she pointed out, would be for them all to change trains at Oxford Circus Station. But not only were the mosquitoes in separate underground tubes different from each other, they were also different from their above-ground relatives. Not just in their proteins, but also in their way of life.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.